Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
Well, I guess, how much sports stuff do you kind of have to fake to do your job, like in Seattle?
We like to have a love-hate relationship with the sports team, so the hate side I got, so it's, you know, I'm 50% there, so then I just have to fake about 25%, to show a little love here and there. Now, my wife likes, I see baseball games. I'm okay with baseball because, you know, there's beer and pretzels, so.
Yeah,
exactly.
I've stopped taking an iPad to the games and reading comic books.
Well, awesome. I mean, like, does anyone in the congregation, whenever you have to, like, preach, get any of your examples since you're probably not using sports metaphors?
Yeah, I mean, we've got at least a pseudo pretentious culture savvy group who, you know, people in Seattle like to pretend that they get all the metaphors even if they don't, and
there you go.
At least keep abreast of those things. So, I mean, there's as much of that as there is with sports. Like, I mean, we're kind of half-hearted on our sports here. At Seattle, we're half-hearted, I mean, hipster on everything. So it just goes with the territory. So even if they don't get them, you know, it's and I don't get super obscure, and you know, I'm not making, you know, references from Citizen Kane or Mud on Sunday. You know, you keep it to the Avengers and everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, there you go.
Wait, have you seen Mud?
I have.
Dang it. It's still on my list of things that I really, really want to see.
Yeah, mine too.
I'm going to put it on that list of things I just didn't quite get.
Really?
Yeah.
It's getting all kinds of buzz. Like, it's just like, you know, the best movie that you'll see this year that you'll never actually see.
Yeah.
It's no Man of Steel, I guess.
It's not even, I mean, come on, like McConaughey doesn't even fly. Come on.
Yeah. Same amount of chest bearing though, yes?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Oh. Now my favorite McConaughey movie is probably still Frailty, honestly.
Frailty was good, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen Frailty.
I'm not the big, you know, Mud is one of those movies. The performances are great. It's just one of those slice of life films where at the end of the film you're not really sure that anything happened.
Mm.
And yeah. I which usually are the critical darlings and oftentimes just don't really turn my crank. It just doesn't. Or everybody just kind of learns to that things are the way they are. It's like Garden State.
People, yes.
I just didn't quite. It just didn't quite hit.
Yeah.
Hit the button.
No, I have friends whose like favorite movie in the world is Garden State, and I'm like, well, I mean, it was good.
It was a movie.
it certainly was a movie. There were moving pictures.
It was, or for me, you know, another one. I just admittedly am not. Like Lost in Translation just did not click for me either. It just.
Yeah, I get mixed feelings from people when I talk about the movie. I personally like the movie, but you know, if I were to try to tell you now like a thesis of why I like that movie, I could not tell you.
Not even a little bit.
I mean, like, I saw it so long ago that like I remember liking it, but I don't exactly remember why, so maybe it's not actually a good movie.
It was before you had seen so many other great movies.
That's true, yeah.
Wait, was it pre Kiss Kiss Bang Bang or post Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Does it matter? Because Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is far better.
I love that movie.
Yes.
Mark finally got me to see it recently, and I was like, I can't believe it's taken me this long to see this movie. So, well, everything seems to be recording in our first Skype/live attempt.
Yay.
So, if everyone is as ready as they're going to be, Mark, are you ready?
I'm ready.
James, you good?
Ready. Yeah, totally.
Well, then I will go ahead and get us started. Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 13. I am your host, Fizz. On this episode of the podcast, we take a look at the second movie in the Thor franchise, which is also the second movie in Phase 2 of Marvel's Cinematic Master Plan.
Dun, dun, dun.
All the big names are back. Chris Hemsworth, Natalie Portman, Tom Hiddleston, Anthony Hopkins, while also adding Christopher Eccleston of Doctor Who fame. In this adventure, Thor is faced with an enemy that even Odin and Asgard cannot withstand. Thor must embark on his most perilous and personal journey yet, one that will reunite him with Jane Foster and force him to sacrifice everything to save us all.
Woo!
See how exciting it is? So my guests this week are frequent guest, writer, podcaster, and amateur filmmaker, Mark Wingerter.
Hello.
And he is joined by a man who has been on the show before, but not in a reviewing capacity, pastor and editor-in-chief at Cinemagogue, James Harleman.
That's me.
That's you. So welcome, gentlemen. I'm really glad that you guys could be here, especially over two different mediums. The phone-in and the in-person technology is amazing.
We're giving it a go.
So hopefully Skype won't fail on us too much. So the film itself, Thor: The Dark World, throws out a lot of very obvious theological themes from the start with its like concepts of light versus dark and good versus evil. But as usual, there is much more than meets the eye. Taking that a step further, we have an entire theology that involves life or light needing to struggle to exist, along with always being able to talk about the very nature of gods themselves. There's family turmoil and division coupled with loss and grief. Add to that the oddity that our benevolent main character isn't the most beloved of this franchise, and the water's only muddy. So we dive into those muddy waters, as we always do on the show, with the first question. First question being, did you enjoy the movie? So,
gosh,
since
such a tough question.
Yeah, I know.
How did you get all that stuff out of the movie? I just thought it was a guy with a hammer that hit things. What?
See, this is why we do these things. For people like you, James, who really don't think outside the box.
I'm so confused.
Well, so James, since you're on Skype, you usually get the benefit of the doubt and you get to go first because we don't want to talk over Skype over Skype. So did you enjoy the movie?
I totally enjoyed the movie. It wasn't my favorite. I think Iron Man 3 was a superior Marvel film this year. That's in my opinion, but I totally enjoyed The Dark World on one level. It felt like world building. It felt a bit like an Empire Strikes Back, if you will, building on the back of a pretty simple first movie. I enjoyed the fact that we got to see more of Asgard and the grit of Asgard. We saw people with their hair down. The first movie, it just looked like a shiny palace place where people stood around in nice looking armor. Which looked amazing, but but I love that we saw what looked like real life happening on Asgard, and it felt like a fleshing out film and really just a build up to the third movie, which might be its one weakness. The villain seemed kind of like a MacGuffin. Love Eccleston, kind of wasted, kind of like I felt Bana was in the first the Star Trek reboot, that Nero character. You have a villain who's being villainous, and there's not a lot of depth, But I thought it tees up, just like Empire Strikes Back cues up a Return of the Jedi, it's sort of teeing up that third act. So I felt it suffered a couple weaknesses just in depth, but was thoroughly beautiful from the idea of world building that a franchise is supposed to be about.
Excellent. And in this film, obviously, compared to the first film, the first one, people standing around, this one takes it to the next level and has people washing themselves in basins of water for no apparent reason. So, Mark, how did you like the film?
I loved it. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Marvel, and I'll go see anything that they do. And to see it done so well visually and just as a film structurally, I thought it was a really well-structured film and just – kind of it you know, these movies tend to have like, this is what they set out to do, and then you tend to like it or not like it based on how well they accomplish it. And so I thought this was just an obscene amount of fun. I mean, I just love going to a movie and being able to just get sucked into a really fun adventure. like this one, and like Iron Man 3, I was with you on that one. I had a couple of buddies that disliked Iron Man 3 this year, and I thoroughly enjoyed that one too. But I really love the humor in this movie. The humor was just on point, and I thought it really seemed like the filmmakers actually really cared about this being its own movie, and just making it a really solid film and a lot of fun. And so I had a blast with it.
So would you say, you know, James has already said that Iron Man 3 was probably the superior film.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree that Iron Man 3 was better?
I do, but I mean, marginally, I enjoyed them both so much. Mm-hmm. I think Iron Man 3, you know, we could, you know, go off and, you know, talk about that on a podcast. Oh, wait, we did.
No, actually, I don't think we did.
Did we not do Iron Man
3? No, Iron Man 3 was right before I started actual recording podcast. It was when I was still doing write-ups.
But, you know, Iron Man 3 was a really good character piece. This is more of like, there's a whole bunch of people doing a lot of fun stuff. So, I mean, I guess more of as a film thing, I would give the edge to Iron Man 3, but they're both done so well, and I really enjoyed both of them. So.
Well, I know you're talking about me a little bit with this person who was slightly disparaging on Iron Man 3.
More so frequent podcaster Griffin.
Frequent podcaster Griffin being, he is... Actually, I wonder how I'd put that, because I would say that James is a very intense comic book geek.
Yeah,
would that
I
be accurate,
so,
James?
Which is great.
It is. I have owned more comics than I probably have. I mean, I definitely have owned more comics than I know have known people.
Yeah. I guess I didn't plan to talk about this, and obviously Griffin's not here to defend himself, but Griffin tends to. Based on his appearances on this show and conversations that Mark and I have had with him in person, he is our comic book go-to guy. And when things deviate too far from the comic, it seems like he often has real issue with that. So where do you land on that spectrum?
It better be good. Well, you know, I had a real interesting thought when it came to – I was at Emerald City Comic Con this last year in Seattle, and Robert Kirkman, the guy who does The Walking Dead, both the comic and also then, you know, consults and informs a lot of the television show, he made a really good point about, you know, the heart of that whole experience, The Walking Dead, is about the idea of suspense and not knowing what's coming back, not knowing what's coming next, and the idea that at any moment any character could die. And if you're just playing the same beats that were in the comic book, you've actually lost the entire soul of the piece. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways for movies to capture the essence of the character, if it just feels like you're painting by numbers, I mean, it's like you're a comic book guy there with a checkbox, just making sure it hits all the stuff you already know. That's not truly the type of narrative entertainment that I think I want to experience. And so there has to be deviation, I think, to keep things fresh. And honestly, Even though Marvel has retconned slowly versus just rebooting their universe like DC every 5 years, nothing looks the same like it did in the 60s. Like if you really go back, like nothing in any of these films looks like the way these characters looked like when Stan Lee first created them. So it's hard to say just because the changes have happened slowly and they've worked hard to sort of nudge, mold, and shape these characters over the years to make them different. They look drastically different than they did back then. So I guess I'm freer. I still get incensed when they change certain things, but I try to put to death the fanboy in me a little bit mm-hmm. here and there.
Well, and that sounds a lot like what I think I get from Griffin in his defense, because I think we are painting with pretty broad strokes.
Yeah.
But it's just that Mark and I are both people who I would say enjoy comics.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, we obviously don't go out of our way to purchase them. If I had all the money in the world, then I probably would. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet. Once this podcast starts advertising, I'm sure people will just be throwing money at me. But until then, okay. Well, yeah. Okay. So that was.
Let's get back to Thor. Thor spent the bulk of his Marvel run as like a doctor with a walking stick that he would tap turn into Thor. So I mean, we're way out of. I mean, we're nothing like the original Marvel comic book Thor. So we're just as far afield as we are if we want to talk about certain Iron Man villains.
Right. Well, so then that brings me to how much I enjoy the movie. And since my Thor wasn't a walking cane Thor, I hated this movie.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You stole my thunder. No, my Thor thunder.
I see what you did there.
See what I did there?
Thunder God,
yeah. I'm so bad at it.
Don't, you're Mjolnir.
Yeah, my... I enjoyed Thor. I would say that I actually probably, looking back, enjoyed Iron Man 3 more, but much like Mark has already kind of said, I think they're both really good films, and I think the fact that Marvel is starting phase 2 with two really solid feet forward,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like a nice hop forward with two, I mean, and not knowing where Captain America is going to land, this to me, much like James said, built the world, it did a lot of world building, kind of set up for something in the future. It not only makes me excited for the Avengers, but I'm also excited to see Thor 3.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know there's lots of people out there, and I guess we'll go ahead and say this now, but like, we're going to talk about spoilers. We're never going to talk about the themes and narratives of a film and not go ahead and jump right into spoilers in the beginning. But the fact that Loki is around at the end of this movie excited me. And yeah. I know it upset a whole bunch of people because they wanted him to have his generically predictable, like,
end.
Yeah, you know, his death that meant something, I guess, yeah, and his redemption.
He's the trickster god. That's just not going to happen. Yeah. I mean, if you know his history at all.
But, you know, so I really enjoyed the film.
Misunderstood.
Yeah, totally.
the thing that, like I said, the thing I enjoyed, it was enjoyable. I did think it was humorous. I thought where they tried to be funny in the first film, that it kind of fell flat or kind of missed some cues, but mm-hmm. I was laughing through this film. Besides the fact that, and I, you know, I'll probably get to this later when I talk about my kind of disappointments or my come on moments. Like, I really felt like Chris Eccleston kind of was wasted a little bit.
Oh yeah.
But like I said, if you look at I feel like Thor keeps pointing us to this idea that it's not really about, or the things that we're most compelled by aren't the villains that Thor fights, mm-hmm. but it's the relationship that Thor maintains.
Well, I think when you're talking about phase two, you know, we get it by now. You know, we get the Marvel structure and the idea of what a Marvel film is going to be now. You know, when you started with just Iron Man, we didn't really, you know, it was like this new thing, and it was new and shiny, and that was when, you know, it was right around when Star Trek had come out, and there was these kind of like new, flashy, big, fast, lens flare type of, you know, big stories, and they were being told in a brighter way versus something like the Batman films were told in a very dark way because that's his character, and you know, so we're getting this kind of new Marvel thing that now we understand going into a Marvel film what to expect. And so to see a movie done so well, and for them to pick directors that really care, like they did with Iron Man 3 and they've done with Thor, these guys are really invested and want to do this film, and everybody's still excited, and then they make this great film. It's really refreshing to be able to go in and know the formula. You know, there's going to be a bad guy in a Marvel film. They're going to get defeated, most likely. I mean, we're not going to really get some kind of different, like, you know, we need to have the bad guy win. I mean, you know, you get the idea of what's going to happen. And I think do it well. And that's one thing I really liked about the movie, but really just the fact that we kind of know what's coming. I mean, Marvel's planning, you know, Thor's not going to die. I mean, you know, Marvel's planning the Avengers 2, and they've got Thor 3 on the horizon. I mean, you know what, and it's like, even with Iron Man, you know, you felt the stakes anyway, even though you knew he was going to come out of it and still be in Avengers 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I was particularly interested in what you thought, James, about all that. And just, you know, as far as it, like, the predictability of all of this kind of structure. I mean, it's amazing to me that, you know, that we know that, you know, even if you know the Thor story, even if you know all of these elements are going to be blended together, that this was just, I couldn't even really pinpoint why it was done so well, but it was like somebody really cared about, like, you know, when you go into Asgard and you see like laser blasters, very sci-fi element blending with like Norse mythology, which is very historic, and then very fantastical, you know, Mjolnir and the fantasy elements of this were just blended so well. I was really surprised at that, even more so than I have been at any other, even the first Thor, because I like the first Thor, but I felt like they kind of fell flat with it. You know, they didn't really kind of push the limits, and this one did.
Yeah, that's a good point. One thing I did feel was a weakness in the first film is I felt like the Earth scenes and the Asgardian scenes seemed a little bit like two different movies.
Yeah, very much.
And this finally blended everything. It brought Asgard down a little bit, but it made it feel a little more earthy. I mean, apparently people are so dirty they need to wash themselves in bowls of water. But and then Earth wasn't quite just the Midwest backwater town. Like you had more than kind of two sets. It felt expansive, and it brought them both. That part of that at the price of bringing it down, I think, from some of the big biblical metaphors that were in the first film. Odin obviously is no longer Allfather, who's applying right correction, and they actually brought them out. They actually, in my mind, made it less of an obvious god to human metaphor, and really amplified, as Odin even says at the beginning, like, we're not gods. We live a few thousand years. You know, we're like Spacey Edward Cullens, and we have a longevity, but we're not gods. And that comes very true. And that's kind of more the learning lesson, is in a way, Dad's kind of acting like a cipher, like a mirror of Father God in the first film, you know, correcting his son. He mm-hmm. has discipline. He learns. But here now you're dealing more with the world like we always do. You can identify with Thor a little more because he's dealing with a fallible dad who's not perfect. He's not all father. I loved even some of that. Even says he's not talking to him. He's got prejudices. He gets blinded by his passion. He lets the ends justify his means. And so you actually see the transformed life Thor has in the first movie. Now he's actually trying to live like a mirror of the way a savior ought to. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of and even rolling back to talk to all the Marvel metaphor and everything, they've obviously got the franchise down, because Thor 2 is a better 2 than Iron Man 2.
Oh, absolutely. So I was thinking the same thing.
We can compare 2 to 3, but that's not really fair. It's a better sequel than, I think, the second Iron Man. So it just solidly expands on everything, and it doesn't get lost in its own Iron Man 2 sort of got lost in its own playground of ideas, and things got watered down. And I didn't think that happened here at all. Strong performances, strong ending, strong setup for a third one. Like I said, it sort of had that everything sort of got muddled. This is like, you know, Luke's journey in Star Wars. There's good and bad. The second movie, everything gets, the water gets muddied. I mean, Thor's world got muddier in this film, and the course he had to chart. He even lost a hand, right? At least, you know, partially.
Possibly. Nope. Wait.
And at the end, there's a dark there's obviously dark foreboding things for the third film. So I think they played that really, really well. You lose some of that easy teach Sunday example of Odin and son, but in some ways, I'm kind of in a place in life now where I don't want the metaphor. I'm a little more Tolkien-esque than I am C.S. Lewis when it comes to teaching. I'd rather see moments of broken characters that reflect other things. I don't want things so analogous that people start to lose sight of a lord to Aslans and Odins.
Yeah. So I really hung on that line of Odin's where he said, "We're not gods, you know. We're flesh and blood. We die." And you know, I really kind of felt like that was a tone setter for the film a little bit. I mean, this film doesn't exactly kind of explore the questions; it just kind of naturally raises. You know, it's more about, like, you know, presenting the story and the action and stuff like that. And that's not this necessarily a bad thing. But I thought there were little moments like that that really kind of set that up, and we really get to – I really liked exploring the family dynamic, like you're saying, of more of that, like, dysfunctional family. Because you really – you know, it tends to just kind of, like I said, naturally raise questions such as, like, you know, Loki and Thor talking about their mother versus talking about their father, and there's this kind of, like, you know – seems like a bad parenting by Odin, and then, you know, you have their mother who was much more loving and stuff like that. So it was really, you know, it's like you can just kind of set that theme and that story in any setting, even in Asgard, you know.
Well, one of the things that it really kind of excited me, based on conversations that James and I we had when I was in Seattle, and we were talking about various films from the year. There was like a theme of dad through tons and tons of movies that had already come out this year. And I was honestly a little disappointed when I saw Thor, because I was like, this is the real dad film. This is the obvious dad film where Odin's got to do exactly like you said, James, kind of like come in and be the all father with the wise advice, reconcile two children, be that father, you know, not only here father but earthly father, heavenly father kind of metaphor. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, whoa, they didn't do that. But I mean, I was going to ask you about that, but you've already answered the question, because I was going to ask you if that kind of disappointed you, because I think I enjoyed you pointing that out. It seemed like we both enjoyed just seeing that through woven through so many films. And obviously that's something that's speaking to our culture right now. But at the same time, him not being that all father, being not being a perfect father, being not only not a perfect father, but a very, very flawed, biased, prejudiced father, mm-hmm. made their entire family, made this entire movie more relatable from the first movie. Because the first movie, it's like, oh, they're all gods. Some are mean gods and some are nice gods, but they're all gods. They're all, and you know, they have wisdom we'll never attain. They have problems mm-hmm. we can't relate to. But now in Thor 2, or you know, Thor the Dark World, we have from the top of the family down a whole bunch of people who are messing up and having to make decisions just like humans.
Yeah.
So I originally put, and I put out to you guys, that Odin was regressing as a father, mm-hmm. but yeah. I think it's more Odin is more relatable as a real person.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's definitely, it's funny to say that you relate to a character like Thor, a character like Odin or Loki. Mm-hmm. But you do. I mean, it's, you know, story arcs are story arcs. Characters are, you know, kind of universal in film. And I thought this one was just really great because it explored that to the point where we'd never seen before. I mean, you know, the original Thor movie didn't do that as well. This one did it in a way that was very down to earth. I mean, surprisingly down to earth for the lofty, you know, visuals that this movie does. And it kind of brings up the question of, like, what are gods in the Marvel Universe that they've created on film and in comics? I mean, James, you might know a little bit better as far as, like, the definition of a godlike being in Marvel Comics Universe. As far as film, though, they don't really define it, but they kind of say it as, like, you know, there's really no difference based on, especially on this film, there's really no difference between Thor and, you know, Superman or anybody. I mean, in any comic, they're just going to have they're people with powers. They're just a different, like, they're an alien. So,
That's been pretty firmly established. Like, even in the Marvel comics, like, they're, you know, they you've kind of got that same idea. There are characters and powers, and even there's a character called Eternity and a character called the Living Tribunal, which actually kind of has three faces. I wonder what that's supposed to be like. But, like, there are bigger powers. So you get the idea that they are at best demigods, and if not, just as this movie kind of explains, just science and powers and a race beyond what humans naturally understand. And mm-hmm. I mean, in a biblical framework, if you're trying to work them in, they'd almost be like angels. I mean, like that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where, I mean, and that's where I think this movie did better than the last in focusing on the human characters, including one saying that he'd had a god in his head and ran around naked. That was, you know, that seems like there's some OT prophets like that. So, you know, we have examples. I think I connected more with the human characters this time. They seem more like comedy relief. Or actually, I thought the weakness of the first film was Natalie Portman just seeming kind of undeveloped. Here you actually get that idea, which I think bubbles up in Transformers. It bubbles up in lots of films that kind of play with this theme. But you know, humans caught up in what is this bigger cosmic conflagration, which I think is a narrative that we're all also – like. We can identify with Thor, Loki, and Odin. At the same time, you've got this whole other half of the story and cast where you're these humans – I mean, you don't get to deliver the big, you know, awesome blow at the end. That's Thor's job. But yet they're part and participants in the conflict. And I think there's something in that we find very intriguing, and we're enamored by this idea that whether it's, you know, robots from Cybertron or whether the idea that there's a bigger cosmic conflict that we haven't been noticing for a while. And, oh, wow, here it is. And, oh, wow, we're a part of it. And now other people are discovering it too. I think that is something that plays very intuitively to our psyche, because I think it ties totally to the biblical realities that we're living in. So yeah. I don't want to ignore the human characters if you're talking about it. Like I found them not just more funny this time, but also sort of resonating with them as they're watching all this transpire and able to contribute bits, but not be the center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, we have a character like Iron Man, you know, and it's a very human character. You know, Tony Stark is very flawed, and yet he is able to do superhuman things by his, you know, you could contribute it to his brain ultimately, how smart he is. But it's because of a machine. But yet, then you have a character who's very human, who, you know, takes a, I guess, a, some kind of medicine or whatever toxin and turns into the Hulk. And so he's kind of superhuman, but he's still human. And yet you have Thor, who is, you know, basically, I guess, how you could define God in terms of this universe, is basically an alien being that's just born with the quote-unquote powers that he has, because it's powers for us as humans, but it's not powers for them. It's just kind of a part of their world. So it's really interesting to kind of see a movie like Thor that focuses on the non-human being that is born with powers versus a movie like Iron Man, where you have somebody who basically creates their own powers, and how they can still both be extremely relatable.
Well, I think something that gave me a hard time really getting into Thor was the problem that I typically have getting into Superman films.
Thor 1?
Yeah, Thor 1.
Yeah.
Thor as a character in general. I mean, even Thor's role in Avengers. Mm-hmm. One of the problems I have really allowing Thor to become an accessible character to me is the problem I typically have with most things that I've read or seen with Superman. Mm-hmm. And it's that he's indestructible. You know, he's so godlike that there's almost no consequences.
Right.
And so if they don't take and focus on the human aspect of it or the relational aspect of it, then I can't really get behind it. I mean, I feel like that's one of the hardest things with, I think the Hulk falls under this, because even though ultimately the Hulk is human, mm-hmm. kind of like they point out in the Avengers, the Hulk will always, you know, basically prevent Bruce Banner from dying.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Hulk gets more powerful the angrier he gets. So you just keep getting mad and it's basically indestructible.
Right. Or, I mean, then you have like Captain America who's still, you know, you can still kill him, but it's going to be really, really, really hard because he's just really, really superhuman.
Yeah, but I mean, a bullet will kill Captain America.
Well, sure, yeah.
Well, I'm sure there's comics where he's been shot many times.
But like you were talking about earlier, it kind of all comes down to that suspension of disbelief too, because we know they're a franchise. Like, I know Jack Bauer's not going to die if I'm watching 24, right? I mean, like, there's the bullet's never going to get him. So at some point, we're all, I guess it's just where you choose. Like, if the movie's called Blank Man, then they're probably not going to die. they're all kind of indestructible in that sense. I guess that's where it's your ability and how you're able to let it go, I guess, is like everybody has a different line.
So it's kind of like the Last Action Hero, like like all those tropes, you know. It's like, oh, we just got to get him back into the movie, then it'll just be a flesh wound.
Yeah,
you know, because you know you can't ever actually hurt
that's really true. I mean it's kind of like, you know, when it comes down to it, I guess that's why we watch these movies, because you know they're not. I mean, it's kind of a gray area, I guess. You don't watch because you know that they're not going to die, but you want to see the suspense. But at the same time, you know, if it's just an ordinary guy that, you know, that's a totally different movie. You know, like
it's Garden State.
Yeah, it's Garden State. I mean, it's like it's kind of like, I think about like a lot of people will get like caught up in like a plot device being easy, like, you know, like with this movie, like Jane Foster happening to, you know, stumble upon the MacGuffin of the movie, the ether, and it gets in her, it getting anybody else. But then I always kind of chalk moments like that up to, well, that's why we're watching this story, this film. That's why it's happening to this. So it's kind of like, do we want to see the guy that's going to, you know, there wouldn't be a movie if we were going in to watch something where you got a guy that picked up the gun and tried to go save somebody and then he gets shot and then the rest of the movie is just him not being there. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a movie. A movie follows a certain formula. And, you know, it's just, I find it fascinating to watch Marvel do it with very technicolor themes and very technicolor superhumans. And that's why we go. It's exciting. It's bigger than life, which you know, one of the questions as we were kind of prepping for the show is, why are we so interested in Loki? And I think that's a that's a totally different scenario versus why do we like Thor? You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think it ties into the whole thing about, like, I'll buy the Technicolor movie I'll buy it even if I know that they're. Now, every year on Black Friday, we watch the Lord of the Rings extended editions, which takes about 12 hours. And yeah, I don't sit there thinking maybe Frodo and Sam aren't going to make it this time. You know, I know, but the way that Jackson and I believe the Tolkien stories are, like, the journey is so arduous that I resonate. Like, and so how is the journey? How nuanced are the characters? I think Loki, I mean, he really grounds this movie with a ton of nuance. I mean, like, you see him, like, he is genuinely distraught at the loss of a mother. And yet he'll use that same pain to deceive. Nowhere did I think, I mean, I suppose you could, maybe you guys read it differently, but I did not think that just because he used that pain as a deception made it any less real. It's just that he's willing to go to those spaces. You notice he never calls his father father, and he belligerently tries to tell his mother that, you know, you're not my mother, but it seems like he lacks some heart for it. But never does he stop calling Thor brother. Like, that, there's just a weird – his relationship, he's so broken on so many layers and yet willing to be depraved – even in some of the places where his pain exists, that was part of why I loved the second one, was just watching that. And Hiddleston, you get a good actor behind that. Yeah, I don't know how much of that is in the script and how much is just that. Does he just flesh out with his smiles and his nuance? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. It cannot be understated how good Tom Hiddleston is at playing Loki. I mean, he rightfully so steals every scene that he's in. I mean, he's been so good. I think that's why they're really pushing Loki even more, just because he's so loved and he's just really good at playing him. But you know, I think it the Loki character has so many different extra added layers on top of everything, because I think he, you know, being this trickster god, it was really fun to see in this movie him be that trickster god, more of, like, you know, the visual tricks and stuff like that. I really loved the moment when he was in the jail cell and he appeared as though he was fine and everything was good, and then, you know, Thor kind of talks him down, and then he the image vanishes and you see him distraught and totally just messed up over his mother's death. That was really cool, but you got to see more of that, and it's kind of like, you know, at this point he's kind of tricking himself, you know. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, at the end, you know, we see him on the throne, and it's kind of like, you know, does he really understand what he's getting himself into? Because the whole movie is about, like, Thor not wanting the throne because it requires you to be this, you know, domineering, kind of at times harsh judge of people in different worlds. And, you know, I think he at one point, you know, mentions his father being like a murderer. They talk about Odin being like, he kills a bunch of people. It's kind of like Loki is just this kind of, like, ebb and flow of just, you know, layer after layer. It's such a good character, and I think Hiddleston's performance really does aid that.
So you're saying, like, Loki is basically inceptioning himself? Like, he forgot which actual...
He doesn't know what level of the dream he's on.
Yeah. Well, okay.
He's self-deceived. I mean, I think that's why... I don't know. Why do we love him? I think on the one hand, we all wear masks, and sometimes we find ourselves lost in them and forget. I think we find ourselves in that space. And so I think there's a sympathy with him that I think people have. And ultimately, I think it comes down to ourselves. Right? He ultimately believes he is justified because he's a victim. And I think that his actions and all that he does are, it's if only he'd had this, or if only Odin, or if only father, he can shift the blame. We've been doing this since the garden. So I think that there is something extremely alluring about him in that.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I mean, I think Marvel doesn't, at least on film, doesn't really truly explore what they're putting out there with Loki. Because, I mean, like, I think the reason why people love Loki so much is because he's mischievous and fun, and you never know what you're going to get, and he's kind of like this evil, but he's not. He's kind of this, like, gray area between a villain and an anti-hero. You know, because as a villain, I mean, he never... Does he ever truly get stopped? I mean, because he kind of just keeps going. I mean, you defeat his army and at the end of the Avengers, and you bring him back to Asgard and lock him up. But he's kind of the half villain of this movie at times. You know, and I think a lot of why people, I was kind of like, this is the question I kind of hung on about this movie. Why do we like Loki so much? And I think the conclusion I came to was, I think we all love mischief and we all love trickster, you know, fun. It, like, it's fun in the moment, and I think that's all Marvel lets it get to. They don't really explore the implications of the mischief so much. Because, I mean, he, like, you know, tries to destroy Earth and tries to control Earth, and then he just kind of goes home and he gets locked in a cell, and then he's having more fun. You know, like, it's kind of, he doesn't really get defined fully as a villain to say that this guy is bad, needs to die. It's more of like he's not really either the anti-hero, because more of an anti-hero is more of like a Tony Stark, where he's just a jerk to everybody, but you want him to win. You know, Loki is this weird in between where he's just kind of mostly fun, but he's really doing some evil things, you know?
Well, I mean, that's why, like, in Avengers, like I said, he did try to take over the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So by all accounts, he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
But then he comes out at, like, San Diego Comic-Con and, you know, gets a standing ovation.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know that people will get really into fans, and you love to see the actor, but, like, there's a love for Loki that's greater than just the fact that Tom Hiddleston's, I think, a good actor.
Right.
And I want it to be more than he's kind of a dirtbag, and that reminds me of myself, you know, wanting to not be a dirtbag anymore. I mean, I guess hoping, like, I guess we can't really hope for redemption for Thor, because Thor was never really seemed to be that lost.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the first movie, he never really, you know, he was kind of, you know, don't get cocky, kid, but, you know, he did. And then, you know, that happened, but we were all, you know, it took 3 days for Thor to have a complete turnaround.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, okay, I'm better now. I'm ready to be a king.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Loki is, like, on a complex journey, and at the end of it, I want Loki to be redeemed.
Yeah.
Because I want to believe that even the worst person can be redeemed.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, and I think the problem with that is, lots of the people, and I was on another podcast where we talked about this, and I felt that from some of the other people, there was real, real disappointment when Loki was alive at the end, because his sacrifice during the film to, you know, kind of save Thor and, you know, ultimately defeat the Dark Elves, like, that seemed like that was his redemption. You know, he had a heart change when his mother died. He realized what was important. He realized the semi-unconditional love that his brother had for him, and he stopped letting his father have that power over him.
Mm-hmm.
And did, you know, chose love over power, and gave everything, and we were like, yay!
Yeah.
Even the worst people. But then he comes back and you're like, Loki's still Loki.
And that moment really brings up the question of, like, was he ever really there with Thor doing all of that? Because it could all just have been a visual trick, you know?
Well, I think he's got to be there.
I mean, he was, but, you know, you kind of get that. That's what I'm saying, like, Marvel leaves it to for him to be this, like, sort of villain most sometimes, and then, like, kind of the anti-hero, and then mostly in between, just kind of having a bunch of fun. So I
have you guys talked to any of the girls who have crushes on him?
Well, I have not.
Yeah, no. This is huge. Like, it's not just the dudes who like the mischief. I've talked with some 20 something gals, and they're totally enamored with the character. And it's the same reason they're infatuated with the character Damon Salvatore on The Vampire Diaries. It's the bad boy who, if he just got the right kind of love, then he would totally reform.
Dating or whatever.
Yeah. And totally, it would Christian or non-Christian. Like, not even, yeah. I mean, I don't even know that the women would necessarily even put those words to it, but effectively it's, you know, his dad didn't love him right. And didn't know if he just had the right, like, the love of the right person, he'd totally be like, he's so dynamic. They're enamored with his boldness and the charisma, and they think that all he needs is the additive of proper love. I've had women that, you know, they're talking about how, I mean, they're criticizing Odin. I mean, and you know, there's some awkward things in the first movie about, you know, you're both born to be kings, and only one of you is going to get it. Right? I mean, like, he didn't have the right chances, he didn't have the right love, and women want to give it. So there's a strange affection. I think maybe it's different by gender with why we like Loki. I don't know.
Well, I think if Loki watched Thor wash himself in a basin more, he would find that love and adoration.
He needs his own basin. Where's his basin scene?
I don't know if Tom Hiddleston's built that way.
He's pretty stacked. I mean, I think it's the typical bad boy character that, you know, why people love Twilight, like you said, or Vampire Diaries or whatever it may be, like, you know, that whole bad boy thing. I mean, if you don't explore the implications of what you're actually doing to the fullest extent, I mean, you know, it's easy to love somebody until you see their, like, true nature. And I don't think we necessarily see, you know, Loki's true nature as what he could be if he were to be allowed. I mean, you know, would they love him if he was, like, an actual being and he was actually ruling over them as much? You know, it's, like, that full implication of that. I think it's just more, and this is a great thing about Marvel, but these movies are just kind of having fun with the concepts. And that's really all you need with this.
It's maybe not really we would, man. I mean, is it not simpler to kneel? I'm just saying.
That's right. Yeah.
That was right there. Yeah. Well, actually, that was going to be my next question. Like, how bad would Loki have to get before the bad boy who just needs love becomes just the bad guy? But, I mean, I guess it's all subjective.
Yeah, where's the line? I mean, it could be a very gray area, which, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, there's so many questions that the implication of these kind of, like, setups and these films and stuff raise. It doesn't really need to be explored. It's there to kind of see and to kind of play with. And I think they do a good job at that. But you know, we're not ever, I don't think we're ever going to see, like, the realistic Thor movie where it's like, you know, I don't know, just some drama, the drama version of Thor. You want fun action movie.
And you don't want to see the Dark Knight version of Thor.
Yeah, no, I don't think you want to see the Dark Knight version of Thor.
even if, Christopher Nolan does it. You don't want to see Christopher Nolan Thor.
As bad as The Dark Knight Rises was, I don't know what I want to see from Christopher Nolan next. I have to see how Interstellar is, but yeah, I mean, like gritty, like the Martin Scorsese Thor,
where everyone dies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so I mean, it's kind of like, what do you do with all of these pseudo implications that are thrown out there of, like, what if there was a godlike being that was trying to, you know. Do we go that far? I mean, do the comics ever get there? I mean, do they ever, like, try to play the realism side of it, James?
It all depends on which comics you're reading. Some of them have gotten extremely serious. I mean, they even had I remember reading a book, Earth X, and they even got into the idea that certain the Asgardians and other characters were actually belief powered creatures, kind of like the Clash of the Titans movie. You know, that's Zeus's thing. Like the prayers and the belief of the people actually fuel our powers, and so they're sort of alluding to it. Just in the same way the old Star Trek TV show, I mean, would try to push things with a character who was half black and half white. I mean, they're sort of undeniable, very simple, colorful underscores that are trying to get out there culturally. I mean, I think that sometimes, you know, what do these films do to us? I don't know that the Marvel franchise is really trying to get a succinct message out in a universal sense, but I'm sure the screenwriters and people involved in the film, and I mean, you throw out a line like you throw a bone line like Captain America's line about there's only one God, ma'am, you know, back in Avengers. I mean, like they're throwing in those things because they at least they have an understanding of culture, they have an understanding of these things, and they're at least trying to get the characters acting according. But then they're trying to paint a world. I mean, ultimately, like, I know lots of people who believe that. They believe that, you know, maybe some things in the Bible actually happened and were true, but they're simply science we don't understand yet as to how the miracles happened. And so there's no ultimately true omnipotent deity behind it, but there may have been influences in our world. So there are people who actually sit around and contemplate that that these are the realities that they're living in. And so there's a potential. I suppose this film could have some potential damage, you know, underscoring this idea for people who don't want to believe that there is true deity, because here you've reduced them, right? I mean, at the same time, I mean, these guys don't look any better than the Greek gods. They're a bunch of infighting, polytheistic type. We wouldn't want them as our gods. So I do think it makes for some, at least you can have some fun conversation around it, even if it never gets serious, even if it never gets to quote unquote evangelism. I mean, it just brokering some of those ideas of what if, which by the way was another Marvel comic, what if, but you know, that just those whole, that whole idea generation, I mean, that's what Star Trek and all those other things have always been used for. And oftentimes it's the kids' cartoons and things we don't think about that are having the most impact, which is why all of our kids' cartoons are now live action movies now for us grown-ups. But they've had an impact. I mean, we love it. I hear Optimus Prime's voice and I tear up a little bit. You know, that's
father. That's,
yeah, that's these symbols do have power. And so for a bunch of people growing up without any idea of cosmic conflict, just truly believing from mom and dad that they're in a random universe. I mean, you think about it, all that you were talking about earlier with the dark matter. It's like, well, the character that happens to be Thor's girlfriend is the one who finds the dark matter. And it's like, well, in a universe that actually has a guided narrative, dramatic hand behind it, those things are possible. So does part of us want to live in that world? So we're willing to believe a story, even if that, it should see that would never happen in the real world. Wait, what kind of real world am I talking about? Am I talking about a world that's random, and so the odds of that are extremely crazy? Or could the same, you know, one baby that survives and gets sent down the river in a basket wind up getting raised in the king's palace and freeing a bunch of Israelites? So I think, you know, do I believe that the universe has that narrative ebb and flow and a designer behind it? Then that, and that's why I think we go to movies. So part of at least wishes that was in reality, even if we don't. I don't know if we believe that's reality. I believe that's reality.
Yeah, it definitely. I mean, I'm with you. I think it just interested me, like, to kind of talk about this on a podcast like this or in a theological sense. You know, like when the first kind of basic conversations I had with Fizz about it was, you know, kind of like, what do we talk about with this movie? And it's like, well, you know, this movie definitely presents a very stark definition of good versus evil. You've got the dark elves, and then you've got the bright lights of Asgard. You know, and so you've got the, you know, the implications of gods versus elves / demons. I mean, it's very much so technicolor, but this film doesn't really do anything with that. It just kind of crafts a story around it. But the broad, and so it's kind of like, I was trying to think of like, what are the broader implications of that this movie brings about? And it doesn't, I mean, you know, Thor is a very fun movie that doesn't really dig. So, you know, and the kind of the question I had originally raised to him was like, you know, it always interests me to see movies like this that play with the meta narrative, and as we see the meta narrative of scripture and kind of see what their definition of a god is, see what their definition of, you know, a heaven is, or a right and wrong, a good and evil. And so it's very technicolor in this movie, but it's kind of like to say that if these are gods, then there is no one true God according to this universe, unless there is, and then he's God over all of this. But then, you know, they don't even go anywhere near that. So unless you count the great line from Captain America and the Avengers, there's only one God, man.
Or unless you become to possess the, unless you become the possessor of the Infinity Gauntlet coming in Avengers 3. But
yeah. Yes.
Wait, so what's coming in Guardians of the Galaxy? And then I thought that was the Infinity Stones.
I think we'll get the stones, and we might even get Thanos showing up, but I don't know if we'll get all the way to, you know, I don't know. Maybe I figured they were holding the gauntlet back for the big, I know we don't fully get Thanos as the villain until Avengers 3. Mm-hmm. So I figure he'll be in the background. You know, I figure he'll be a part of Guardians of the Galaxy. I just don't know if they're going to get all the way to all five stones jammed into a glove.
Gotcha. Well, and that was a sidetrack, so I apologize for that. But and it's something I wanted to hit that I think ties into something both of you guys were just saying. And it's this whole concept that we get behind. I think we like hurrah or give like Thor a huzzah at the end of this movie because he, you know, he has that line, "I would rather be a good man than a great king." Mm-hmm. And it's amazing people's disconnect from what they believe on a day-to-day basis and from what they'll completely get behind when they watch it in a movie. Because there are very few people that I know in my life, or I mean, just in the world. Heck, you can just turn on the news and you see next to no one who I think their, you know, their ideology, their motto, their modus operandi would be, "I would rather be a good man than a great king." I think everyone wants to be a great king, especially in this country. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting when everyone was like, "Yeah, Thor, you tell Odin, maybe Loki, who knows, really." Yeah. We'll find out next movie, you know, like how it is and how our values and our morals say that, you know, being good is better than being, you know, great and recognized. And I just love that when people don't pay attention and realize that their entertainment views are completely different than the way they act on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, we all want to be the king of the world, right? We all want to be Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean,
that's why we go to movies. I mean, because, you know, at least, and I think this kind of speaks to the meta narrative, the base idea of how our world works. I think everybody knows that these kind of powers don't exist, or, you know, maybe, you know, on the theoretical idea that they do exist, most people don't believe that they actually exist. So I think that's why you're part of why you're attracted to a movie like this. You know, movies can do what normal life can't. And so, you know, I think you're right. I think if a lot of people were given the choice, "Hey, do you want to be a king over this kingdom, or do you want to be a good man?" You know, I think I almost think it's easy to say. A lot of people would say, I want to be a great king. But regardless of the broad, you know, supernatural way that it is presented in this movie, I think once people, you know, see, because they see Thor and they see, you know, why do we root for Thor at the end? Well, we see Thor with all of this stuff that, well, we don't have. We don't have a flying hammer and we don't have all these powers of a god.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, you've technically never met James.
True. He may have his own Mjolnir.
He does have an inflatable captain's chair.
Oh,
that's true.
Oh, excuse me. That right there, that makes you superhuman in my book. We need to have a Star Trek one then. Get him on. Okay. Anyway, side Trek. I'm a huge Star Trek fan. Anyway, so, you know, I think it's presented in such a way to where we see Thor giving up all the things that we would just love to have. But if you're bringing it down to a realistic sense, you know, if we're presented like with all of the implications of what would be to be a king over a kingdom, that's what Thor denies. And I think that's what I would think some people would deny that. I mean, I think a lot of people would be like, "Yeah, money and fame, power." But, you know, when you have a kingdom, I think that's a little bit of a different thing. Am I making my point clearly enough? You know, it's like money, fame, and power is like what Thor has. Like, you know, he's got this, you know, he's got powers. He's got he's got the fame in his kingdom and stuff like that. But he's not turning down that. He's turning down to say, I have all of these nice things, but, and I could have even more, but I'm not going to take that because of what it costs to run a kingdom, which is something I don't want to have to go through.
Oh, so you're saying he's abdicating responsibility. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think so.
He's basically being a teenager.
Yeah. You know, I think that's, and so I guess I see.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah. He's got all the toys, but none of the, doesn't want the response. Wow. You know, I hadn't thought of that angle.
I mean, you know, so I think that's, it's, I don't know. There's a lot of layers there. Like, again, like this, all of this brings up that, you know, I think people are not, as we believe, people are not naturally good, but, you know, some people are going to turn down that just because it's more than you really want. So we're rooting for Thor really because we have an understanding that he's sacrificing what he could have, but really he's giving up, you know, having the responsibility of having, he wants to go live with his love and be able to do that and kind of just be this, I don't know, like freelance warrior kind of thing, you know? I don't know.
He's like, no, Dad, I don't want to go get a job. Just give me the keys to Rainbow Road so I can go visit my girlfriend.
Wow.
But I mean, I still think he embodies that hero aspect. Because I mean, you know, we want that hero, and so he very much is that. But it is interesting that he would rather give the kingdom to Loki.
Well, he didn't know it's Loki.
Well, no, but he literally says he's like, you know, he thinks Loki's dead. But what he says is, you know, my brother Loki is more suited to this because he knows what it's like to have to make a choice, like having to kill, you know, a horde of frost giants or whatever it may be in order to keep the throne. So,
and yet that's the kind of person you want. I mean, I guess, yeah, I mean, that maybe that's going to be the third film, I guess, maybe trying to be prophetic. That would be, that's where they need to go, right? I mean, the person you want on the throne is the person who ultimately doesn't crave that responsibility, but the person who has to accept it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that's like the Hobbit. I mean, that's Lord of the Rings, right? Like the Hobbit would rather have the simple life, but the journey's needed, right? I mean, and there is something beautiful and valuable to just being content with that simple life, with a simpler life, or without having to have that power, but then the willingness to pick up the responsibility when it's needed. I guess that ought to be three. I mean, that really needs to be, as who knows where they'll go, but hey, that could be a great place to be three.
Yeah, we should write a script.
Let's go ahead and get this together.
Yeah, we should write a script, send it to Marvel. We can, you know, get it on making it. Yeah.
Dear Josh, should you still be in charge come phase three, yeah. We would certainly like you to consider this script for Thor 3.
I don't know that we could write a better script for Thor 3, but I know anyone on this podcast could write a better episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Oh!
Oh, man.
Yep,
you ain't kidding.
I was wondering if we were going to go there. But
it's funny. Have you seen the S.H.I.E.L.D. episode tie into this movie?
I have. I didn't get past the girl with the flower dress. That episode scorched me and I was done.
Oh, well, actually, there is a tie-in episode to this movie where an Asgardian staff gets found and all this stuff happens. It's actually a decent episode, but it's still pretty bland. I actually saw it last night, and so it kind of, you know, starts restirring the movie for me. But it's kind of like, yeah, it's so meaty. And it's funny because Joss Whedon did it all, and it's very interesting to see it be very mediocre.
Well, actually, one of the things that we were concerned about, like the wife and I were concerned about when S.H.I.E.L.D. came out, was that personally, in the Doctor Who universe, it was like, we can't get enough Doctor Who, all right? And so when Torchwood came out, we were like, yes, we're going to watch Torchwood. And we watched like a couple episodes of Torchwood, and we were like, no, well, I just want Doctor Who.
This is Doctor Who without the Doctor.
Yeah, and I don't know how everyone else feels about Torchwood, if anyone's seen it, but like that's kind of how I feel like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It just isn't.
I didn't get into Torchwood, and Doctor Who's been Doctor Who without the Doctor since Tenet, but
oh no.
Which
I can feel that.
Lots of people agree with you on that, but
I'm excited for Capaldi. Let's go.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give that a shot.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot. Well, we are, I mean, there's a couple things that we didn't hit on, but I mean, we're getting to about that time where we need to start winding down. So we're going to, if there's anything we didn't cover, you know, people are free to comment or there will be ways to contact us and talk to us about it afterwards.
One thing we should cover really quick is that the amazing thing about the Thor franchise and the second movie in particular is how much it really is just a modern day mirror of the old Dolph Lundgren Masters of the Universe movie. But that's...
I gotta say, I haven't seen the Dolph Lundgren Masters of the Universe.
You do not know what you are missing. That is that's a true statement.
Literally, I don't know.
You do not know.
Yes, I'll say nothing more. Somebody's gonna Netflix it now.
That's right. I need some like intermission music, and we're back. We all just watched Masters of the Universe. Well, let's, like I said, so let's move on to, like I said, what we do every show. Everyone's kind of come on moments, or, you know, like disappointments in general, or something that, what stood out to you that you wish was done better, or just seem really ridiculous? And as always, since you're on Skype, James, you get to go first.
Wow. I wasn't really sure that, you know, I don't know. I've been going back and forth. The first thing I think I was really taken aback, by the crazy Selvig. I didn't feel like that it was entirely warranted by what I saw go down in Avengers. It was an odd choice. And it, as I've read other people's reviews and saw it a second time, I got that, I don't know if it just seemed like it was done for comic effect and had very little to do. Like, it didn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've backed off thinking that was the stupid thing. Maybe it was certainly, I got laughs out of it, but I don't know if it felt like it was like when we successively hit Thor with the car multiple times in the first movie. It seemed like it's done for laughs versus real consistency. Mm-hmm. So as much as I admit I laughed, I don't fit.
Yeah. Somebody brought up a point about like, well, Loki was also in the head of Hawkeye in the Avengers. Is he going to have to be crazy or like deal with that in some weird way or whatever?
Well, Hawkeye's an Avenger. He can cut it.
That's right.
He's got S.H.I.E.L.D. mind training.
Yeah.
Wait, was that mainly it, James?
Well, you know, and the amazing, I can see let's pull the portal moving technology out of the hat at the end of the movie was sort of.
Yeah.
It was fun to look at, but yeah.
iPad on a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some stuff in the end that was kind of like, okay, I mean, we get it, you know. My come on man, besides the wash basin of token.
That's my favorite moment.
I watch a lot of Arrow on the CW, so I'm immune to that now.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I guess you would see a lot of it there. I think you could also lump the, if you saw the very, very at the end credits kiss between the two of them, I think you could kind of lump that into that hunky, do we really need this? I don't know.
Come on, man.
Don't you like love?
I do like love. I mean, the problem with that...
At the end of one, they couldn't repeat that in two. They had to...
That's true. I mean, anyway. The bigger come on, man, for me, I think there's kind of two. One was the Asgard defense of, like, why wouldn't they just put the shield up all the time? I mean, like, you know... And then it just is very so easily kind of taken down and everything like that. And then just that whole kind of like ease of like invading Asgard was kind of like, wait, don't you have to come in like through the Bifrost? And then how do you could just like access Asgard through a spaceship in space? And can I go to Asgard?
I got a spaceship.
I get a spaceship.
I'll bet you do.
Yeah. I also thought there was some, I mean, and this is kind of like, going back to what I originally said about how well they do like the basic, you know, kind of Marvel structure theme, but you know, there's so much ease at which characters tend to fall into just plot devices, like with, you know, Jane Foster being the one with the ether and that kind of thing. I think it's overlooked a little bit of how easy everything was because it was done so well. So it's kind of a good and bad.
Gotcha. Well, my moment wasn't necessarily a moment. It was something that actually James talked about in his opening spiel, and that was basically the missed opportunity to really showcase Eccleston's talents.
Yeah.
Mm. I thought he made a very evil-looking dark elf, and I'm a big fan of Chris Eccleston, and I just felt like that entire device, you know, that whole dark elf thing was... almost, it was just something that had to happen so we could watch Thor and Loki interact.
Yeah.
And while the Thor and Loki interactions are great and that whole development was awesome, obviously we spent a lot of time talking about it. I was really excited to see Eccleston kind of step up to the plate and, you know, put his name out there for people who just didn't watch Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You know, and I just felt that was just really missed. you know, which kind of has to do with the whole, like, how does the nine realms lining up at just the right time, not really explained, iPads on sticks, you know, all that part just seemed kind of very washed. Like, oh yeah, it just works. Oh, it does? Yeah, yeah, because it does. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know, but like Mark's, you know, talking about, like, it's, it kind of works if you don't really think about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if maybe if it wasn't Chris Eccleston, I would have let it go.
Well, they did. I thought the directing was pretty great in this movie, but the one thing that did annoy me about Christopher Eccleston's portrayal was that every time he entered anything, the director used that trick of, like, from behind, like, going, like, from, like, shadow into light, and, like he's exiting something and going into another space. Like, that's usually done as, like, a way of introducing a villain, and he did it, like, every single time he was on the screen. Like, it was just kind of annoying, but...
we go 180 degrees...
Okay.
...to our favorite moments. So, James, what was your favorite moment in this movie?
Favorite moment of the movie...
And like I said, we cheat all the time, so you can have a couple as long as you make it quick.
No. Honestly, I probably thought the most genius moment was I actually did buy it. I bought the Loki death. I figured I didn't know where they were going with the third movie. I figure a guy like Hiddleston might have, you know, wanted to get out while the getting's good. He's already been a major villain in one of the Avengers movies, so they might have let that be the swan song. So I sort of rolled with it briefly. Maybe I was tired. I wasn't on my guess the narrative game. So his performance and all my second guessing about maybe he'd segue out set me up. Well, I thought it was a great emotional scene. I thought it was well played, and they also took me, you know, which is it's good when I'm not paying attention and they actually pull the wool over my eyes and then they surprise me at the end. That's a good thing.
Cool.
I have a lot of kind of like broad stroke things, but I mean, like the biggest broad stroke like of it was I love how, and I think I've already mentioned this, how they blended all of the different elements really, really well. I really did like seeing Heimdall in action finally. Idris Elba jumping off the Rainbow Bridge onto the spaceship with his knife, and he brings down a spaceship with a knife.
I want yours.
I was already taken mine.
It's the best moment. I forgot.
Yeah, man, that was.
I love Idris Elba.
Really, really cool. I really liked at the final thing you see at the end credits with the monster like chasing the birds. And I forgot about. I love the humor of this movie. It was so funny and just so well, you know, kind of rhythmic throughout the. They hit it at the right points, and it's just, I love that a lot.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about the Iron Man movies. Not to get too far on a tangent, but like it's always serious and it's always funny.
Yeah.
And I felt like they did a really good job in this movie of balancing those two things. I think it's hard, and I think most of the comic book movies that are supposed to be about superheroes need to strike that balance, which is why I think the Avengers work so well. Joss Whedon doing that, like everything's serious and everything's funny.
Yeah.
So, but my favorite moment, well, one was going to be Heimdall because like I said, I love Idris Elba and him finally getting to step up and be like, look, you see me in these other movies. I'm just as
awesome
as in this movie. I would say, outside of Heimdall, my favorite scene also involved Loki. It wasn't his death scene. It was the scene where, because like, I was completely fooled when after their mother was killed, and he came down. He was pretending everything was cool.
Yeah.
And then having, you know, he's like, you know, Thor says something like, you're stop pretending or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm quoting it directly. Stop pretending or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we see Loki having destroyed his room. And I don't know, that scene just, it really got me. Not just because I didn't think that he had actually had that kind of reaction, but because once I realized he had that reaction, it added so many layers to Loki and a character that in this film or in this franchise actually that is already probably more layered than nearly any other character. And I just, I mean, it became, you know, Loki, the Dark World, you know. But I mean, that, like I said, that scene was probably my favorite, because you know, then they had to deal with his mom feelings.
Yeah,
he had to deal with brother and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. still try to keep that cool, calm demeanor. So
I still don't understand why, you know, they can bring some people back in Asgard, but they can't bring like token characters back, like, any of the soldiers, or you know. I don't know.
Well, it depends on how many extra lives you have.
I guess so.
If you have, like, it's like in Link when you have the fairy in the bottle.
Oh right, yeah. Shwing, shwing. Yeah. Anyway. We didn't get the when the hearts are running out.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or how one of his buddies can turn into Chuck, but you know. You got. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Last comments. Anything else that we missed? You wanted to say about the movie before we wrap it up completely?
Bring on Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron. You skip Captain America.
Bring on Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy. That's right.
Yeah. I haven't been that excited for that movie, but I think back of all the Phase One movies, I think I was least excited about Thor. So I'm going to hold out that teaser leads to something great.
Yeah, I mean, as from every comic book person I've heard, they're like, "Oh, you don't understand. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy is it, man? It's gonna be awesome." I'm like, okay.
That kind of makes me worried when everyone tells me how awesome it's gonna be.
Yeah.
So are neither of you guys excited for Captain America?
Winter Soldier?
Yeah, yeah, Winter Soldier.
Oh, I think it looks phenomenal. I got blown away by the trailer.
Yeah, me too.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not blown away by the trailer yet, because I don't know because I saw the trailer. Actually, I saw the trailer online on my laptop, and mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And I saw it before Thor, and I was like, oh, okay. You know.
Oh, speakers.
But the only thing I see in the trailer right now is a potential villain that, you know, could be moderately difficult to beat, but seems more like a, you know, another MacGuffin, and then just a lot of things blowing up. And nothing. Are we going to learn anything about Captain America himself? Because they talk more about like the implications of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is interesting, but it's not a Captain America movie. So I don't know what I'm.
Do you not know who the Winter Soldier is?
I really don't.
Okay.
So I mean.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not a comic book.
Do you want to know who the Winter Soldier is?
I would love to know who the Winter Soldier is.
James, you can tell him who the Winter Soldier is.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You spoilers right now. It's Bucky.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In Captain America, he's obviously been experimented on in that prison, and then he falls off the train. I mean, his friend who's mm-hmm. been, yeah. Anyway, well, if they follow the comics, right? Then again, Iron Man 3, I rest my case. Maybe it is.
Yeah,
maybe it's something completely different. But in the comic book run,
it's Scarlett Johansson.
She looks a little different.
Yeah, a little bit different. That would be cool. I mean, it doesn't look like it's him, but I mean, that'd be cool.
Well, finding him as the Winter Soldier is something that, like, a cursory Google search would bring back.
Okay.
So I don't really feel bad for anyone out there who didn't know it. Yeah. And, like James has already pointed out, Iron Man 3, you know?
Yeah.
So they could change it up. They have actually said that there is supposed to be a heavy dose of Black Widow in the Captain America movie. They're supposed to be doing some kind of teamwork, working closely.
Which has quite a tradition in the comics as well. And come on, two words should get you excited about that movie. Robert and Redford, right? I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
but again, from the trailer, he looks very underutilized. So I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those movies that... and this happens every once in a while. I see the first trailer and it's like, okay. And then you see the second trailer and the second trailer just totally gives you way more and you understand a little bit more about what's going on. And I'm waiting for the second trailer.
Well, does it not weird you out to think that of Samuel Jackson and Robert Redford sharing the same screen? Like, doesn't it seem like that's...
How can that happen except in a Marvel universe?
Yin and yang.
I'm just wondering if Samuel Jackson will ever walk in anything other than slow motion.
Yes, exactly.
Nope. Not even when he's trying to get snakes off a plane.
No.
Let's see. All right. So I'm sure everyone has enjoyed this discussion.
Yeah.
If people would like to further that discussion, Mark, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, I'm on Twitter. I've been doing a lot more Twittering. I am Twitter. It's Mark Wingdinger. It's just a funny version of my name. I have some links that I will post on this. We'll post again. I know we've done it on the
past. Yeah, we'll put them in the show notes.
Again. On the show notes of short films that I've worked on in the past, and then I have another one that's coming out soon. It's almost done. We shot back in March. It's been taking forever to finish, but I've probably talked about a couple podcasts by this point. But sometimes things go slow. So I've got a couple of those going on, so just check me out in the social verse.
All right. And James, if people want to follow your work or you personally, how can they follow you or get a hold of you?
I'm more of a Facebook guy, so you can find James Harlem in there, or you can find Facebook, Twitter, everything at cinemagog.com, which you're guaranteed to not know how to spell. So take cinema and synagogue and smoosh them together.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes, so they won't have to spell it. They can just click.
So easy.
But and for those people who don't know what Cinemagog is, you want to give like a 2-sentence spiel?
Cinemagog, we use a combination of audio, video, and a lot of text reviews to kind of do a lot of what we're doing here. Look at film and try to see what intriguing spiritual parallels, biblical parallels, thematic ideas bubble up to the surface, and how we can use those in conversations to make the entertainment experience more than just consumption and more of a conversation. And that's why I've published a book recently on how to further that and share some of my experiences over the last decade. So
excellent. So if you want to interact with me, let me know, or if you want to let me know what movies you'd love to hear us discuss on the podcast, then feel free to follow me on Real World Theology's Twitter account at Real World Theo, or follow me personally at Physification. You can also find us at our blog, realworldtheology.com. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you do find us on iTunes, review the show, bump our rankings, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. Again, I just want to thank my guests for being here. Thank you, guests.
Thank you.
you, the listeners, for taking the time to make us part of your week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.